So maybe you've read about the great urbanization that's happening in China these days. The country's planning to move more than 100 million people into cities by 2020. For a long time, a national registration system has reinforced two distinct classes of people there. What kind of healthcare, education, and other government support you get depends on whether you're registered as an urban or rural person. Earlier this year, China announced it's slowly phasing out the registration system as it moves people out of the countryside. But Tufts urban planning professor Weiping Wu says that actually, rural migrants have already been moving into the cities for a couple of decades now. Anne Strainchamps asked her how that's changing China's biggest city, Shanghai.
Yeah, Shanghai is indeed the largest city in China, and it's getting close to be the biggest in the world as well. And it's really interesting. It's only since 2000, the census, that we start really counting migrants in the population. And so before that, we had about 11 or 12 million local residents. But since then, the number of migrants has really drastically grown. Now, about a third is migrants. So it's just a very, very large inflow for the city. And the city is, in some ways, has managed well in the sense that it has used some of the transient housing that it used to use for local populations, for migrants, rent out to them, allowing for a space for some migrant schools to operate, although the challenge is if Shanghai or any other large city is being more welcoming to migrants, then you will have more migrants coming in. And so it's quite a paradox for these large cities.
How does this play out culturally? Because it sounds like you're talking about a city with two extremely different populations. If a third are newcomers, migrants, and then they're the city residents who maybe have been there for generations.
Primarily, I think it is culturally different in terms of dialects, in terms of appearances, in terms of level of education. You know, it's so interesting. You know, Shanghai actually is a city of migrants. 1840, you know, the Opium War time, Shanghai was a small fishing village. It was not a big city. And it became a very large city in the first part of the 20th century. So in that matter of 100 years, Shanghai really grew. But how? By migrants. In fact, there are very few people who can say they're really Shanghainese. So you would think Shanghainese would be more accommodating to migrants, but that's not necessarily true. So in a way, it's very similar to U.S., where, you know, we are a melting pot, but, you know, we have this attitude towards new immigrants. But I have to say, you know, I've studied migrants since late 1990s. I think the attitudes of city folks are really changing, maybe slowly, but certainly more positively.
How do you see that? Are there things that people would have said before about a newcomer that they would not, in general, wouldn't say now?
For instance, yeah, I mean, in the late 90s and early 2000s, you know, if, you know, we began to see some more crimes and, that's because we have so many migrants. I think you hear a lot less of that now. And part of the thing is that the local residents interact with the migrants so frequently on a daily basis. You know, look at my parents. They have an hourly help inside their house. She's a migrant. So a lot of Shanghai households use these hourly domestic help. And almost all of them are migrants.
What is this category, migrant?
Right. So in the official enumeration, a migrant is someone who lives in a place other than his or her place of household registration. The Chinese actually has a very interesting name for that. They are floating population, 流动人口. In fact, that is true. A lot of migrants move from city to cities. And then even when they come to a city like Shanghai, they move much, much more frequently than local residents in terms of where they live.
Is this comparable to the migrant labor population in the U.S., or is it rather different?
A colleague of mine and I have done a sort of a little comparative work that we look at the similarities between China's migrants and the undocumented immigrants in the United States. In some ways, they're similar because they encounter a number of restrictions in terms of looking for jobs, even in terms of access to certain types of low-cost or affordable housing.
So then what happens when you get these two cultures sharing the same space in a city like Shanghai? I mean, do you see that class divide shaping the way the city is growing?
So when we were looking at both 2000 census and 2010 census data, a number of neighborhoods just outside of the central city are increasingly more and more populated by migrants. And so you have these very interesting subcultures that, you know, migrants open up small restaurants and their customers are almost all migrants as well. Mm. And also you go to what we call the urban villages that are areas that used to be rural in the edges of the metropolitan Shanghai. But now the farmers don't have land anymore because they've been developed, but they still have their old village housing. So a lot of migrants are renting those village housing. And so they really concentrate over there.
That's interesting because I was thinking about also about simply the appearance of the city. And I was thinking, you know, Shanghai has to be building on a scale that humans have almost never seen. And it sounds like it's not just that they're building these huge mega skyscrapers, but also that the city is growing out. It's, you know, sprawling.
That is correct. Yes, actually, it's sprawling, but it's in a different way from American cities, maybe with exception of New York or to some extent Boston or San Francisco. That is, the central city, the downtown, is really, really important. Everybody wants to be there if they could, and it's very high density. But on the other hand, it's not affordable for many people, so it is spreading out. It is dense. It's a lot more people, a lot more crowded, and it is much more convenient. That is to say, I used to joke with some of the Chinese students who come from Shanghai, and I used to teach in Richmond, Virginia, and no bad words about Richmond, Virginia, but they came and they're going like, what am I supposed to do at night? There's nothing to do. You know, in Shanghai, you know, 2 a.m., whatever, you know, you feel absolutely safe as a woman by yourself to walk in most places. And there will be eateries open all over the place. It's exciting, it's chaotic, it's noisy, but it's just really energetic. And you feel like it's so much fun just walking on the street and looking at other people. And so if you want a peace and quiet, that's not what you're going to get.
As an American listening to you, I'm wondering, seeing how much Shanghai has changed and shifted and adapted over the last decade or so, are there any particular lessons we here in the U.S. could take from that?
Well, I think it does take collective actions. So, for instance, when I was young, when I would go to Shanghai and they had these, you know, slangs, then you are from outside, you don't know how to speak Shanghai dialects, blah, blah, blah. So for a long time, actually, the Chinese government started to force all schools to learn Mandarin so that people from different places can live in the same city, you know. So actually, it's gotten really a lot easier to get around in Shanghai without speaking Shanghainese. So in a sense, there's quite a bit of a strong hand of the state, you know, the government, mm-hmm. in sort of managing how the sort of different streams of population can mix and intermingle. And so maybe that's something that I think it's this, you know, it's almost like you go to Australia and you go to Canada and you see a lot more multiculturalism. It's because, you know, the government makes a real conscious effort to promote that. And I think that's really important.
Weiping Wu teaches at Tufts University. Her latest book is The Chinese City.